righty, here we go with the John Curley, Shuri Ellinger show. Well, look at this. I was seeing the stories about, I saw that Patty Murray was on the other day talking about child care costs and the federal government and all the money that they were able to print in order to send out during the whole lockdown. They're running out of money. I never ran out of money. They're not going to be spending it anymore. They're stopping the funding that was going to daycare. So now, senators coming in and others, we're going to make sure that money keeps coming in, keeps pouring into daycare, keeps pouring in to support the daycare program. So hold on, diving into the news. Here we go. Yes, from the mighty 13th District, Mr. Tom Dent joins us. Thanks a lot for coming on. I'd seen Tom when I started doing some research on this. That you were working on this whole daycare stuff long before the emergency crisis had been going on. Sort of,
that's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. And it was, I think it was back in 2007, 2008, there was some legislation that was going to be this thing where you're going to be in the union, you're going to get in the union, you're going to have representation. The daycare workers now have to have a whole bunch of various degrees. You got to have the government involved. You saw the encroachment of the government into daycare, and then you also see the cost of daycare continues to increase. So what do you see as a possible solution for all the families out there in the Northwest that are dealing with this?
Well, I think we need to take a serious look at what child care is and what we want child care to be. And, you know, we've added the early learning component into child care, which, you know, I'm okay with early learning. I think it's really a good thing for our young people. But we need to just determine just how far that early learning is going to go, exactly what that looks like, what we expect of the folks that are in there teaching the early learning, and then what we expect from the regulatory environment that we put in there. And then as we continue to put additional regulations on our child care folks, but we're not funding that. We're just saying, okay, here, you guys have to do this now, but good luck. Take care of it. Pay for it yourself. Well, it's not like this is a big lucrative business that just has more money than it needs, right?
Right.
And we just need to take a look at this and find a pragmatic solution to this. And I think we can do that. But yes, we've become our child care centers, not only in the state of Washington, but in the country, have become dependent upon this money that's coming out of Washington. And that's what's kept them afloat for the last, you know, 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to break any system and destroy the basic open free market, have the government get involved and begin to subsidize something, i.e. look at college, the cost of college tuition. So in this case, you have the government come in and say the person that runs the daycare center must have a master's degree. That the people that are working there also must have, I don't know, 12 years of something or other when it comes to education. They're all the restrictions that are going to be put in place on this. We're only going to drive up the cost. Then the government's going to come in and start to subsidize. And then the consumer will never know the real cost of anything. So you can't really shop around to find one or another. And then you've created what we have right now with the same sort of with our healthcare system.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly what we've done. And, you know, right now our child care workers in the early learning programs, you know, they have to take some classes, some college classes, you know, in order to stay in this along with their high school diplomas. And, you know, it's a struggle, and many of them don't want to do it. And so they're not staying with their job. And, you know, people that work in child care are special people. Mm-hmm. They really are special. They have a special knack with children. And I've toured, I can't tell you how many child care centers I've toured in the state of Washington. And these folks just are special. And they have a knack with those kids, and they can take the time of those kids. But we want to make it something different. We're going to make them better. We're going to educate them. And I don't think that's making it better. I think we're putting ourselves into a hole. And it's obvious. Our child care is closing over in eastern Washington here. We're just living in a big child care desert.
Right.
And, I don't see a fix to it.
Right.
Unless we just have to back this up and change this our outlook on the regulatory environment and give them a chance to, you know, give the free market a chance.
Hey, Tom, do you know why? We did a story on the air the other day about somebody did a study. I think it was LendingTree or something. They put out a study, and they said Washington State is one of the most expensive states to raise children in, and the biggest portion of that cost is child care, especially early child care, like before you get into schools and things like that. Why is Washington so expensive compared to every other state when it comes to, you know, taking care of your kids?
Sure. Well, the regulatory environment, for one thing. So child care, they regulate how many kids per square foot can be in a room, you know, in the classroom. And then, you know, so if you can say you have 10 kids per one student, for one teacher, well, if you have 11 kids, then you need to have two teachers. Well, that's increased your cost by two, right?
Right.
But I mean, these little things like this have just continued to ramp up, and we haven't dealt with that in a proactive way to say, well, maybe we're okay at 11, but not at 15, right? Something like that. But we're just not finding these answers. And then the square footage requirement is, there was a story of a new child care center in Yakima that went in a few years ago, and I was there. I looked at it, and they built it as a child care center, and they built the rooms with the square footage required, you know, to handle so many children, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what happens is they put the molding on the floor and it shrunk the room, and they dropped the kid, okay? So it's like, oh, wow, you're kidding me, huh? But that's what happened. And, you know, that was overregulation in my opinion. And then we put the educational requirements on our early learning teachers. Well, that ramps it up. And then we come into where it's just getting harder and harder to find folks that want to work because we're putting more on them than they want to do. You know, not everybody wants to have an education. Not everybody wants to, you know, to do all these things. And like I say, let people do what they want to do. And not everybody wants to make $1 million in their lifetime, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and teaching and working with these children is just amazing when you see these people. And I've talked to many of them, and they're happy just being with the kids. That's what they like. That's what they love. Let them love that, right?
Tom, talking with Tom Den from the 13th District there in Yakima and Kittitas County. Tom, if the consumer walks in and says, this is good for me, I'm happy with this. That person doesn't have a master's degree in something, and that person over there, she's 55 years old, loves kids, great with kids, doesn't have a big degree as well, but just likes being there. And there's 10 kids or 12 kids, and maybe there's not like this outside thing, all the regulations that the government puts in place. But the consumer, the mom and dad go, that's fine for me. I'll pay for that. That's a good price. So now you have a one-on-one. But when the government gets in there, other than protecting for the general health and welfare of the child to make sure that they've passing, you know, to make sure that person's not a pedophile, they're not doing this or that. Other than that.
Right.
It's just between the consumer and the provider. You don't need the third party in, right? It's not. It's like a restaurant. It's like everything has to be filet mignon, and everything has to be fresh, flown-in lobster from Maine. When the government steps in and says, well, this is what we're demanding, that those are the standards of all of it, then there's nothing underneath it, so then all of a sudden that entire market goes away, and then you only have, you know, top-shelf daycare as regulated by the state of Washington, and there's the cost is, you know, $200 or $300, $400 a month. So
yeah, or more.
You can't break this, Tom, because now once you got the unions in there, and they're going to make these people join the teachers' union, forget about it. The train has left the station.
It's kind of interesting, John, what you were just saying, because it kind of implies that parents don't actually know what's best for their kids.
Oh, that's always the case, right?
Because parents, when you walk in, like you were saying, the consumer, the parents walk in. I have three young kids. We've had to look for childcare. I'm looking at everything as way closer than the government's going to look at it. I'm going to make that decision and go, okay, this is safe for my kid. I trust these people. So, but the government's saying in this case, they're saying, no, parents can't be trusted and they don't know what's best for their kids. And we know what's best for their kids, which is why we have all these requirements.
Did you check the square footage, Jim?
Right. Well,
I didn't check the square footage.
Tom's in there. Yeah. Tom Dent's in there, you know, trying to at least pry that open, reduce the regulations on this thing so people have a chance for the market can provide for the services. But it is an uphill climb. Tom, I appreciate you coming on. How are the horses, by the way? I still want to buy one from you, but...
Yeah, horses are good, but, you know, I could sure like to sell you a couple of buffalo, so I get plenty of those.
Seriously? How much room do I need for a buffalo?
Oh, you know, a half acre would be good.
Oh, yeah. I got 26.
There you go. Well, then I'll bring you 26 of them.
wait, I need the government to regulate that. That sounds too many buffaloes. Really? So how hard? Well, I have to talk to you off the air, but I want to find, how hard is it for me to have a buffalo?
Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah. And is it easy to take care of?
They're easy. Easier than cows. That's why I have them.
Let me ask you a quick question. A buffalo and a bison, is that the same thing?
I don't know. Ask
same
Tom.
Thing.
Same thing.
So like at Yellowstone, we see all those videos
like
of the
dancing
people
with wolves.
Getting close to the bison. That's
right.
A buffalo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, buffalo's the slang word.
That's a beautiful animal. Sure. You should get some.
Yeah. At least two.
One last question.
Okay.
If the wind is blowing the wrong way, which is across the buffalo field, is it a big problem? A lot of stink and stuff like that? And will it is? I'll have to talk to you off the air. I like this idea.
The problem that we have, where I live right here is when the wind is blowing across the marijuana grove over there.
That's,
there we go.
All right, everybody's happy. Now we're talking. All right. So from the 13th system, Tom Dent, enjoy your time away for a little while, but get back in there and fight for the free people and the free minds there in Eastern Washington. By the way, everybody from Seattle's moving to where you are. Just going to let you know that, okay?
Yeah, I understand. So thank you. Appreciate being on your show today.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Have a great weekend. All right. There he goes. Yeah, buffalo would be nice.
You should get a buffalo.
Dude, at least two. You can't get just one. They're lonely.
The prop. What the hell do you know about buffaloes?
Do you know that for a fact?
No, I'm just making that up. I'm making that up. But most animals, come on. You need
I've never seen. I've been to Yellowstone a lot of times. I've never seen a buffalo hanging out with another buffalo. I think they're pretty content being
buffaloes.
I have herd animals.
I don't know about that.
Look it up, Andrew, please. A buffalo need a friend.
Is the buffalo a herd animal?
You know who's at the barn right now? Brandi Cruz having her wedding.
She's getting married?
She's at the barn.
Huh. Must have lost my invite.
Why are you there?
I'm here doing radio, talking to Tom Dent, the 13th
sister. She's getting married right now?
No, not right now. Okay. Tomorrow.
Okay.
Why aren't you going to it?
It's tough. It's a wedding venue issue, I think. I don't know.
You weren't invited?
I wasn't invited.
All right.
You know what? We just recently rekindled our... Okay, can I just share something with you, honestly,
sure,
on the air?
We really have no news. Go ahead.
All right. So I have noticed there's an awkward thing that happens when... And we didn't plan on talking about this, but this seems like the space to work it out.
By the way, to show you how completely off the rails are, we're still waiting to find out if buffaloes need friends. So
yeah,
go
we'll
ahead.
Get back to that. All right.
I know how to make friends in Buffalo.
Okay,
now.
Keep going.
Okay, so I have noticed a trend that when somebody that you know is getting married, they feel a pressure to invite all the people in their lives who are important, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But then there's a whole separate list of people who you might be an acquaintance with or you might be like kind of a casual friend with.
Yeah.
But you don't warrant an invite to the big day. And this happens all the time. Anybody mm-hmm. who's ever been married understands this. You have a budget you have to stick to and you can only invite so many people. But I've noticed that when somebody is not going to, like, and I've been on the not inviting side of many weddings, and so I've noticed this, people will kind of like start to push you away a little bit because I think they're feeling the awkwardness of not inviting you.
Hmm.
But I just want to express, I totally understand. I've got married. I had to not invite certain people to my wedding because we were trying to keep it small. I hold no grudges against anybody who doesn't invite me to a wedding. Yeah. I totally get it.
Right.
So for Brandy, I hope her big day goes wonderful. And I've met her husband. He's a peach of a
Mike's
guy.
Mike's a great guy. So yeah, there Mike's probably a was a time. They're sitting at night. They're sitting there and they're looking at the list. And they're like, okay, so
score
what are you down to?
Score
I'm down
yikes.
To 40. What do you got? I got 37. So we try to get both of you down to 30. So then they've got to like go through there and scratch your name out there.
Now, I don't know if I ever made it onto the original list, if I'm being honest.
And just to make the thing seem more interesting, I have you on the list.
You're on my list.
I've got buffalo facts if we want to talk.
All right, fine.
All right, listen, buffalo are a herding animal. Jennifer in Gig Harbor says herding animals love to have friends. They prefer it that way. And they herd to protect each other from predators.
A buffalo friend. They don't want human friends. Friends. Okay.
You got to get two, John.
They have no buffaloes on the wedding invite list. Okay. Well, we'll find out from Brandy how it goes there.
But you know what? Mazel tov. I hope the day goes well. And, I'd love to be friends with them again after.
But they have 100 people on the list. You were not one of them.
I was not one of them. Yeah. But the weather's going to be beautiful, so I think it's going to be a nice day.
Wow, you are really into this. Gee whiz.
Take it easy, man. Wow. You're not getting invited. It's too late. Jeez Louise.
You guys need a bartender?
Just stop it, would you?
No, I'm busy anyway. I can't go. Don't worry about it.
Okay. You have anything else you want to say about this?
No, I'm fine. It's not a big deal. I just want to say again, I don't hold grudges, and I don't care.
I hear the sadness in his voice.
Yeah,
Let's move on.
I'll just say this, that I was trying to move these little paddle boats that we have around the little lake out of the way, and I was moving them yesterday for the aesthetics to get them, sort of tuck them back into the woods.
Yeah, it's not like the most romantic looking
thing. No, it's a big plastic thing.
Yeah.
And I was sort of begrudgingly doing it because I had other things I needed to do. So as I went to get out of the boat, I fell in the water and my phone fell in the water, which only makes you that much angrier when you're like, oh my God.
Also, the idea of you speedily trying to move a paddle boat seems funny. Not made for speed.
Not made. But it's certainly for looks anyway. All right. Well, boy, we have covered it all. From Tom Dent trying to do what he can about daycare and the cost of daycare to the sudden realization that a buffalo needs a friend and you don't have any friends, Jake. Sherry Elliger Show. Sherry out. Jake in. Thank you, Jake. Working hard, doing double duty. Your show, this show and your show. So thank you for your public service.
You're welcome.
Yes. I was talking to a guy last night. I had dinner with Mike, and let's say his last name, and he seemed rather pessimistic about the general direction of not only the country, but specifically the city of Seattle.
That's a shame.
Yeah, and we talked about, well, I don't think he's in the minority. I think a lot of people feel this general way, and he was saying more and more people will move away, tired of the crime, seeing that nothing is being done, tired of the taxes, tired of stuff, and then just begin to abandon cities. And then I was talking to him about, look at the abandonment of Detroit. So when Detroit and when Japanese car makers started answering the call for smaller, more efficient cars, and Detroit didn't respond quickly enough. And then as the manufacturing left and the businesses left, and then they were pushed further outside the city, and then the city kind of imploded on itself. People moved out. The only people who were left were the people that couldn't afford to move anywhere. But the city then had more calls for more services, but it didn't have a tax base. So then it just started grinding on itself, and then it really became this kind of real mess. So then you start to think, how long does it take till the city of Seattle and other cities like Portland, it's really teetering on the brink of just complete collapse, where there's just enough people leave, enough businesses leave.
Is this the doom loop that you often hear
about? The doom loop, yeah. So in the city of Seattle, I think even people that would be considered to be liberal or on the left get to a breaking point. And that's kind of what you're going to hear, because they were deciding the recent ruling. They're going to come up with the new law regarding how they're going to deal with people that are smoking drugs in public, right?
Yes. Yeah. So Seattle City Council recently voted on this ordinance, which would allow them, finally, the attorney's office to prosecute drug-related crimes.
Right.
They voted 6-3 in favor of the law, which a lot of people were very surprised about, that the Seattle City Council would even vote for that.
Well, it was close the first time. So in this case, it was only one. Lewis was kind of hanging on the thing and voted no. So Shama Sawant, who's not going to run anymore, she's not involved anymore, but she hasn't given up any of her political persuasions.
No, she certainly hasn't.
No. So everybody's favorite communist slash socialist says,
I will be voting no on this bill, which is attempt number 2 by the city's Democratic mayor and city council members to do the bidding of the Chamber of Commerce and empower Republican city attorney Ann Davison to decide when to prosecute and criminalize. The so-called war on drugs was created as a weapon aimed at reestablishing the mythology and stigma of black criminality that has been a core ingredient of the racist narrative in the United States.
Okay. Just a little quick fact. When crack cocaine came into play in New York City, I happened to be living there at the time, it was Charles Rangel and other black lawmakers that demanded that crack cocaine be treated differently than cocaine. They were the ones that said, this is a scourge on our community and is destroying our people. It was the black legislators and it was the black caucus that said tougher sentencing, crack down, get this out of our neighborhoods.
They saw what was coming down the road. They didn't want it.
It was not only down the road. It was in the road. Yeah. It was on the road. It was right there. You couldn't walk outside my building without stepping on a little plastic vial that had a little green top on top. I remember stepping the first time. I was like, what is that? And all of a sudden, there was crime everywhere. So it was the black caucus that started the whole idea of the difference between crack and coke. So that's just a little bit for there. But she's saying, Shama Sawant, the whole thing, the whole war on drugs, is all about trying to get black people. That's what she pushes all the time. And then I would say this guy's probably on the left. He lives in Seattle. He runs a business. What's he sell?
He's a cannabis advocate. Yeah.
Fine plant.
I agree.
The public gets a chance to speak.
You voted against me and shut me down. I lost out on generational wealth. And I'm supposed to listen to you? Stop using your black face for this white agenda. That's what you're doing. You're full of shit and you know it. You voted against me and I lost out on millions of dollars.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, whoa. Oh, so he's upset. She voted against me, and I've lost out on millions of dollars. So he might have an axe to grind because of the pot business. Let's just say, hang on.
Stop using your black face for this white agenda. That's what you're doing. You're full of shit, and you know it. You voted against me, and I lost out on millions of dollars. I started cannabis here in this city. Emerald City Collective was the first downtown Seattle dispensary, not Sean Kemp. And you voted against that. And you sit up here talking all this bull. Now, what about that? Now, that's real. That's real.
Okay.
I'm a pioneer in this. And she's sitting up here using a black face for this white agenda. Vote for this bill and clean up this damn city. I've been here since 1978. Yeah. Clean up Seattle. Stop all this bullshit and clean it up.
All right. So he had to take care of a little bit of personal business first, but then eventually clean it up.
But I think his I think the thing he's still upset about at the end there, he says he's lived in Seattle since 1978, and the city has gotten noticeably worse. It's gotten bad, and he wants to see them clean it up.
I talked to a police officer today. He said, here's what happens. If you get, he said, here's the problem if they don't clearly define what we're supposed to do. Because right now it's like leave it up to the discretion of the officer. He gets a call. There's somebody smoking fentanyl. So he arrives or she arrives. The police officer arrives. There's the guy. At this point, decide under the discretion of the officer, you know what? I tell you what, I'm not going to arrest you. Although what you've just done is a gross misdemeanor. So you've been smoking. You're not allowed to do that. So what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to put you in a LEED program. Now, the LEED program doesn't have enough beds, doesn't have money. So there's really no place you can put anybody. But the officer says, I'll take you. We're going to look towards the LEED program rather than, you know, get you involved in this. At that point, the guy says, oh, you know what? Screw you. And, you know, so the old man you rode in on and blah, 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 blah. And then starts to walk away. The officer gives him an order prior to stay right there. You're not on arrest, but you got to ask you not to leave. Okay. He's going to start him on the program towards this league. Going to make a few calls and stuff. The guy begins to walk away. At this point, the officer says, hey, come back here. Come back. Come back. The guy turns around, swings at the officer. Now, at this point, the officer, under his discretion, was starting the LEED program thing. But now, does he lay hands on the guy? Because now all of a sudden it turns into, I've got this guy resisting arrest. But was he being arrested?
Yeah, like you said, if they're just inviting them to go to a different location where they can hopefully get help, that's not an arrest.
But when you see where the problem is, like, I'm stopping you because it's a gross misdemeanor. But I'm not going to arrest you. I'm going to start this program. But as he begins to walk away, now, is he resisting arrest because he wasn't under arrest? You got to clearly define this sort of stuff. So the mayor says he's going to work it all out. I believe, here's my prediction, nothing will change. The cops, there's on view and on call. The cops will not do anything. When they're told to do it, they're going to show up, hey, don't do that. But they're not going to arrest the guy.
Well, why won't they arrest him?
Why would you want to do that? Because it's up to their discretion. Because down the arrest record, you got to put the race of the guy. So the cop pulls up. He's a white cop. Why did you arrest him? You could have put him on the LEED program. Why'd you choose to arrest this guy? You didn't arrest that guy. He's not going to do anything. Why would you risk your job? Why would you risk anything to be investigated? Just pass on by. And when someone says, oh, you look over there, you see the guy smoking fentanyl, just keep going.
Yeah.
Don't do anything.
Yeah, it's putting cops in a really tricky situation. Like
you
were saying.
Don't leave it up to them.
No, it's
write it out. Look, if the guy's smoking it, he's smoking pot, and you're smoking some drug in public, you're not supposed to smoke, you get him, you arrest him. Not like, oh, I'll decide later on is there whether or not I want to let him go or not. Why you let the judge? Why you let the cop do that?
Yeah, why can't that be something?
He's not a social worker.
Why can't that be something that the city decides?
His job is to catch bad guys that are breaking the law. Not roll in there and go, let's talk a little bit about how your parents raised you. I mean, come on. And then you wonder why. I mean, the city council is just going to eat these guys alive.
And then you wonder why Seattle can't fill police officers.
No.
Tough job.
No. Are we going to do that story about the guy that was yelling at his neighbor?
We can.
We missed it earlier, but we can roll it over.
There's no rules. It's Friday.
There's one rule on Friday.
Yeah, no depressing stories about people in Arizona. Yeah. That is a weird story.
Good. All right. I like that rule.
There was a story back in 2022 about Bob Ross. Bob Ross is, of course, the painter from PBS, the big guy, fro. You know, that was a perm. Did you know that? And
what?
Yeah, you've never seen a picture without the perm?
No.
You look like Charles Manson.
That wasn't his real hair.
No.
Well,
once he did it.
Nice.
Is it Bob Ross music?
Oh, yeah. The joy of painting.
Yeah, once he permed it, then he had to stick with it.
That's a look. It's definitely a look.
He's in his 40s. The black backdrop in front of the easel, holding the palette, 25-minute show. He'd start with a blank canvas, start painting, and just landscapes, and then he would talk about the happy trees and stuff like that. My mom watched all the time because my mom was an oil painter, did oil paintings and watercolors. She used to watch a lot, and she used to follow along, and it was... I don't know how many people watch them, but for some reason now, I guess because of social media, the guy's a gigantic star.
He's a star. He's got a YouTube page where they just redo these videos. They put these videos up, and they've got like 5 million plus followers on this YouTube page. That's huge following.
It's hypnotic. It's got that stress relief.
It's peaceful.
Vibe.
Yeah. It's definitely like a.
Do you have any
like
Sound of Action speaking for people who don't know who Bob? There's no Sound of him talking. They banned all that stuff. You can't go and watch.
We can go watch this.
Listening to him. Well, anyway, if you'd like, you can buy his first painting. It's $10 million. His first painting is now up on the block. You could buy it if you'd like for $10 million. No one has purchased it yet. Where is it?
The guy who's listing this, it's at a shop in Minneapolis. The guy who's listing it acknowledged it's a very expensive price for this first painting.
Yes.
And he said, basically, this is the not for sale price. If somebody wants to buy it for $10 million, I think it's actually like $9.83 million. Okay. But if somebody wants to purchase it, I imagine he'll let it go. But apparently the painting was purchased from PBS, where he did the show. PBS sold the painting to a woman when they were trying to raise money for a local thing that the PBS station there was doing.
Yeah.
His first show was at a small studio in Virginia, and then it kind of caught fire. And so this woman purchased this painting and had it hanging on her wall for 39 years.
Huh.
And then at some point, this guy got wind of it and made her an offer. He bought it, and now he wants to show it to people. I think the $10 million price tag is actually just a way to get you and I talking about it. But his ultimate goal is to show the painting to everyone, let people know how great Bob Ross is.
You want to hear a little, Bob?
Yeah, of course.
Bring back some great memories.
It'll help create that illusion of mist right down at the bottom. And sometimes it's a lot of fun to put several layers. It helps create depth in your painting.
Yep,
and for that, we'll add a little more blue, but we make it a little darker.
Oh, good.
Add a little bit of Prussian blue to it and make it a little darker.
It's
but
very hard to learn how to paint on the radio, though.
It's really tough, yeah. Have you guys seen that documentary on Netflix?
His son got
Happy Little Trees,
posed.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And Bob's personal life, unlike his painting life, is fairly controversial. If you get a chance, you should watch it. It's like a bunch of...
Not for anything he did. Like, he partnered with a paint company, and they robbed him. He was
in a weird relationship with the producer of the show, and she was married at the time, and his son lived with such and such, and it was just like kind of a disaster. But he has this, you know, fair to middling talent painting. He's not like a master. He's a pretty decent painter, but he's not a Michelangelo.
Well, there's a difference between being having an artist and then just reproducing within 20 minutes a landscape, which is basically just technical work that he's done.
Yes.
A friend of mine about 15 years ago had all this wall space and loved bad art. So I said to her, you know what you should do? Call every like YMCA or community program that has art classes or, you know, adult learning classes where you get a chance to go in there, you're an adult and you'll learn how to paint. And a lot of times the artists or the students would leave the stuff behind. Call up and see if you could just get a bunch of it. And she called about 15 or 20 places and she eventually had hundreds of really horrible portraits and horrible art. Which she then framed beautifully and has it on the wall, and it's really cool.
So collectively,
because it's so kitschy and so awful.
Yeah,
right. A lot of self-portraits and stuff.
Yeah, what is that saying? The sum of the parts is greater than the something something. You know that saying?
No.
It's the sum of the parts is equal or greater than
the vegan plumbing traffic desk.